This is Ozarks at Large. Mike Beebe is winding down his final year of his final term as Arkansas governor. This winter's fiscal session was expected to be his last legislative session, but this summer, several issues have developed that require special attention and perhaps a special session. More fixes to the public school employees' insurance fund, including the elimination of part-time employees from the plan, as well as spouses who have other insurance options, is on the table. Also, lawmakers are talking about earmarking a portion of state funding that goes to general education needs, specifically to paying for insurance premiums. Where does the governor stand on a call for a special session, and what else might be in play? Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics recently sat down for a one-on-one conversation with Governor Beebe to find out more.
Public employee insurance special session on the soon to be called, I think. Where do we stand on this?
Well, we don't know yet. I anecdotally got some information yesterday they were changing the bill again. I don't know if that's true because we haven't seen anything specific, nor have we heard directly from the sponsors, but we've got some background information they were changing it again. So if that's true, then it's all back to square one because we have to see the bill. If the bill that we've already seen and that theoretically is being circulated among the members of the General Assembly is the bill, then I will support that bill. And we'll call a session if I get a roll call from each house that suggests that there's significantly over the majority needed to be able to pass it. The reason I say that is you don't call special, I don't call special sessions unless we can get it done in 3 days, which is the constitutional minimum for how long it takes to pass bills through both houses. And I've lived through governors calling special sessions that lasted a month, and I don't do that. If it's not, a special session needs to be restricted to something that's an emergency that needs to be done, that there's such a consensus on that we can get in and out in 3 days and not waste taxpayer money. So that's what the hang-up is right now. Which bill is it? Is it the bill that we've seen and approved and being circulated? If it is there a sufficient majority so that you could even maybe lose a few votes if people wavered at the last minute and still be assured that you're going to get in and out and accomplish your purpose in 3 days?
You feel confident, though, that you guys will get there on this particular issue, this teacher insurance fund?
No, I don't, not at all. I mean, I think the feedback that I've gotten is that there's some disagreement among members of the General Assembly. Now, I know that the people that work very hard, Senator Hendren and Representative Copenhaver, have both indicated confidence, and certainly they're close to it. So I'm, to some extent, I'm going to defer to that information that they think we're going to get there. But I temper that with, I've gotten feedback from other members, particularly the Senate, that say they're having a difficult time reaching that consensus. So I don't know that you can say as we speak here today that it's a done deal. I think in the next few days we'll know for sure.
What's your sense from talking to those House and Senate leaders of what the potential hangup is? Is it the dollar figure amount, or is it the way that the solution's been structured?
I think it's the solutions. I think there's some opposition to taking part-timers off. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some opposition to redirecting some of that FICA saving money that theoretically is going to be generated to go away from the public schools generally and into insurance payments. So those are the two areas that I've gotten feedback on. And I think it's even been reported.
Sure.
And I think some of the constituencies like the school administrators and some of the superintendents, the Administrators Association and some individual superintendents have expressed some opposition to those aspects. To the extent that they're influencing any of those members of the General Assembly, that could be what we're seeing right now.
There is a possibility of other items being put on a call for a special session. I've heard everything from prison reform to lotteries to potentially broadband, open government records. What, in your estimation, because you get to make the decision on that, what do you see as a realistic possibility of something else that may be added?
Well, if we're going to have a session, I think we need to address the problems our counties are having in the county jails and our prison backup, if we've got a solution to it. And we do. It's a little complex. I don't know how much you want to get into it, but I've been able to identify $6.3 million in ongoing revenue that could be available, not just for the immediate fix, but long term.
Where does that $6.3 million come from?
A number of years ago, we had some agencies coming out of the State Central Services Fund that were overspending, or at least expanding. And the State Central Services Constitutional Officers Fund was running, not necessarily a deficit, but it was getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so that's funded with 3% off the top. We increased that percentage to 3.3% to cover that problem. Now, we've built those balances back up to the point, and that spending has leveled off vis-a-vis the growth in revenue to the point that we can legitimately afford to go from 3.3 down to 3.2 off the top for constitutional and fiscal agencies. We're still building slowly that balance up to the balance you want to have to be fiscally responsible. That frees up $6.3 million that's ongoing money, and $6.3 million will get you 600 actual new beds in a combination of areas that already exist without building anything new, but just staffing it, so that we could reduce that backlog by 600.
What about any of the other possibilities that I threw out there? Lottery restriction, broadband, open government
if
records?
If the legislature wants to hold off on that lottery restriction and take it up in the regular session by putting a moratorium on it through a special session, and if they have that same kind of consensus, then I'll include that. If not, I won't.
Anything else?
That's all I know of right now.
That's all you're pondering right now?
Precisely.
Could be more, though. You're leaving the door open.
Not necessarily. I mean, broadband needs to be addressed, and the law needs to be changed in that regard. The task force said it needed to happen. I've come out for it. DIS understands it has to happen. There's a lot of opposition from the telecoms, as you might imagine, but that's not ripe. The legislature's not ready to address that. There hadn't been enough discussion about it. There's still a lot of stuff that needs to be fleshed out, but they'll probably have to deal with that later.
Let's shift to a trade mission you have coming up. You're going to Europe for the second time in your administration over the last, I think 2009 was the last time you were there. Air show in London, you're going to Paris, and you're going to Czechoslovakia. Tell me what's going to go on this trip. Who are you meeting with? And I mean, without betraying any confidence.
Hopefully it'll be, they won't kill me like they did on the China trip a couple of years ago. And we were just talking earlier, I think it was, we were 11 days in country. I think it was 13 days counting the travel time. And I think we're in eight different hotels and eight different cities and provinces and all that stuff. I was ready for.
And you love to travel so much, too.
Yeah,
so that just made it so much more enjoyable.
I'm just really a big traveler. That's why I don't go much. No, this is the air show is specifically designed to address our current aviation industry presence in Arkansas from Europe, as well as potentially to get some more or some expansion. Everybody knows about Dassault, but you know, our number one manufacturing export in Arkansas is aerospace. And this is a big deal. They have this show in London one year, Paris the next year. They alternate between the two. And it's a trade show and an economic development. I've never been. They've tried to get me to go before, so I'm going. And then Paris is, as you might imagine, part of those companies that we already have cultivated a great relationship with, and we continue to cultivate that relationship. You know, we just expanded Dassault. We've courted Dassault, and
that was one of the fruits of the labor of 2009.
Right, exactly. And now we've expanded that, and with the potential for even further expansion, and maybe even a supplier or two there. Czechoslovakia is totally different. Actually, it's the Czech Republic now because they've split Czechoslovakia into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. They've had very little, if any, state gubernatorial contact in the Czech Republic. And there are a number of businesses in the Czech Republic that are looking at North American presence. And it's fertile field because, you know, now everybody's going to China and everybody's going to Taiwan and Paris and London and all those other things. We'd like to get in on the ground floor of what the Czech Republic companies might be interested in.
What kind of companies exist in the Czech Republic? Not something that every man in Arkansas would know
off
the top of their head.
The kinds of things that you would expect. They've got significant arms manufacturing, and they've got parts manufacturing, automobile parts manufacturing. They've got a pretty broad array of manufacturing opportunities.
In recent weeks, I've been asking a number of legislators about what they see happening in terms of workforce development.
Yeah.
Obviously, a big push from the last fiscal session to make some changes. Give me an update of where workforce education and that whole overhaul exists at this point in time. Are you satisfied with the progress that's being made?
Oh, I'm satisfied with the fact that everybody's got it on the front burner. And that everybody recognizes that some coordination of effort could improve everything. We've got a lot of success stories, and there have been a lot of good things that have happened. Now, you know, I continually point out to what happened at South Arkansas Community College and how they've worked with businesses down there to create these process managers and all the folks in the industry are in and around South Arkansas that need specialized training, and how that community college has responded with the appropriate curricula to make that done. Great success story. Same thing in West Memphis. Great success story with what Glenn Fenner's done over there to make curriculum and course offerings responsive to the needs of business and industry. Pulaski Tech has done a good job. Even some of our four-year schools, you know, Molex had trouble with engineers, with the kind of engineers that they specifically needed, and only Purdue Texas A&M were turning out those kind of engineers. ULR changed some of their engineering curriculum to meet those needs. So we've got pockets of success stories. Fort Smith has done some good stuff. What we don't have is the kind of coordinated across the board everywhere success stories that you'd like to have. And workforce development may be the number one key to economic recruitment, retention, expansion. We hear stories that, you know, you got a lot of people unemployed, but then they've got a lot of jobs open and waiting.
Right.
Because the skill levels of the people unemployed don't match the needs of business and industry. So it's part of the state's responsibility. We did this with Hino when we totally changed that whole situation and turned something that was pretty bad into something that was pretty good. So the state has a responsibility to try to be responsive to the needs of business and industry, primarily through its technical institutes and its two-year colleges, but not necessarily limited to that. There are cases where our four-year schools and our four-year degrees need to be doing some of the same thing. What's going on now, and Senator English deserves a lot of credit, but so does his workforce cabinet, pooling the resources from all those different efforts that currently exist and try to do it in a comprehensive and cohesive way that gets the best bang for the taxpayer's buck.
Let's shift our gears to talk about health care. We've got a few minutes left here to talk about that. We have seen, obviously, a lot of debate and a lot of political potential change for the private option and its potential fate. You have said that you see you're not ready to write the private option's obituary yet. You're optimistic about it.
Absolutely. I'm always optimistic.
What makes you optimistic about it with what you know in terms of the vote count down in the Senate at this point in time?
Well, first of all, you got about 175,000, 180,000 working, primarily working Arkansans. These aren't folks laying around doing nothing. They're people that work for businesses that don't carry health care coverage and they don't make very much money. Some of them are trying to go to school at the same time that they're working 40 hours a week trying to just put bread on the table. It'd be very difficult to throw 180,000 people off of health care. That's item one. Item two, the actual math for all this is still present. We're going to be paying for this as Arkansans, whether we take it or not. These other states have figured that out. The Joplin editorial yesterday said, you know, they're closing hospitals or they're laying off folks in Missouri because they wouldn't do what Arkansas did, and it can have a catastrophic effect on hospitals. Here's why. Part of what they did in Washington, and you don't have to like them or like what they did in Washington or like Obamacare. It then becomes, whether you like it or not, if you want to change it, go to Washington. If, as long as it's not changed, what does Arkansas do to take advantage the best we can for Arkansans and for our businesses and for our hospitals and for our taxpayers? And so the hospitals are helping to pay for this under the federal law with a reduction in Medicare payments.
Sure.
If they don't get the Medicaid expansion to offset it, they're really in a hole. It's $28 million a year.
That was the crux of the Supreme Court decision that kind of changed the dynamic on this.
And it's $28 million a year just to UAMS alone. But here's another reason for my optimism. If you've got 74% of the legislature that's for this and 26% that's against it, do you think that 74% is going to let that 26 get away with that? I mean, I expect there'll be as much, because it takes a three-fourths vote, I expect there'll be as much of that 74% as is possible to force somebody's hand.
Do you worry about some of the politicians who have boxed themselves so in a corner position on this that they cannot change it and survive politically?
You always worry about that. That's why you may see some tweaking to the point that it allows some cover for some of those folks that once they look at the whole world and see the whole picture, they back off rhetoric when they were running and didn't know any better and look at the realities and what it'll do. There's a $100 million hole in the budget if they do away with it. What are they going to do with that? You're not going to take it away from education. Supreme Court won't let you. Prisons are already in trouble. Where are you going to get the money?
They start some of those tax cuts, aren't they?
Precisely.
I don't see that happening.
Well, if they don't, then they've got a huge hole. And you know, that's just the reality of governing.
We'll grow our way out of it, Governor. Isn't that what they always say? We'll grow our way out of it.
Yeah, well, I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't do that stuff.
We got about a minute left here. Last question for you. Payment reform initiative. This is another healthcare issue, separate from the private option.
Right.
I had Peter Banco on the show last week from St. Vincent's, and he said he is seeing some really significant savings throughout their healthcare system.
America has to do this. I think the other 49 states are going to follow Arkansas. I think the federal government's end up going to follow Arkansas. The old fee-for-service model is unsustainable. It's never going to continue to be able to work. This is the way the country has to go, and Arkansas is leading the way.
Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics talked to Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe this weekend. The conversation Roby just mentioned with Peter Banco from St. Vincent's will be on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.